America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
All right, everyone, we are back. It's Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobbio. It's Chris Algieri, and we're presented by PPV.com. This is a PPV.com fight week as Badu Jack is stepping in the ring to defend his WBC cruiserweight title, taking on Noel Michaelin. You can order that on PPV.com. Chris, we have a busy episode today. We have a lot of voicemails. It's always a fun episode when we drum up the voicemails, put out the bat signal yesterday, and they came pouring in from all parts of the globe. And we got some dandies today. Anyway, how are you?
I'm good. I'm curious to get into these voicemails. I love hearing from our listeners because I think we've expanded quite a bit in terms of our reach and who listens to us. So we got some really, really good, smart, poignant boxing heads out there. And we got whatever the opposite of that is.
Well, yeah, there were some not so great ones. There were some good ones. There were some really long ones. I would just tell everyone out there, try to keep it under a minute. If you want to make it onto the episode.
Even a minute's a lot.
Even a minute's a lot because there were some like 3 minute ones. There were some like really long ones. There were some ones that sounded like they were concise. Like jackhammering.
Concise.
So what else is going on in the world of boxing? Shakur Stevenson and Teofimo squared off for the first time. In New York City, that's going to be a lot of voicemails came in on that. We have Diego Pacheco headlining a card in Stockton, California. Matchroom is going to Stockton. So there is some action this weekend. Like we said, Badu Jack stepping in the ring too on PPV.com. We'll talk about those towards the end of the show. But, you know, it's a little bit of a nothing much this weekend, but we got the big one next week in Miami. Jake Paul, Anthony Joshua is happening, bro. It's happening.
I guess it is. I really didn't think it was going to. I mean, anything can still happen, but it does seem like it's going to happen. I saw an interview where Jake Paul was talking about how his nose has been moved over a few millimeters. It looked more like more than a few millimeters. That's not great going into a fight, by the way. Just saying. I've broken my nose in training camp before getting ready for a fight. That sucks. Like, it really sucks. So that should be interesting.
That's good if you're on a Pat McAfee show and you're trying to, drum up some attention for boxing to the masses. They don't understand that a broken nose probably isn't the best thing, but that clip went viral.
Yeah, fight still happens though. So that's something that people are like, oh man, you know, he shouldn't even fight, or he's gonna pull out because of his nose. Guys, we fight with broken noses all the time. It's not that big of a deal.
Broken everything.
It hands. Sucks, but yeah, I've gone into fights with broken hands. I've broken fights with broken ribs. Not uncommon. It happens. Training camp's really hard. If you're doing it right. Apparently Jake Paul's been doing it right because he got some real heavy hitters for sparring.
He said Frank Sanchez is the one who cracked him.
Frank Sanchez is a badass. So that doesn't surprise me one bit.
We're living in a world where Jake Paul is getting heavyweight sparring. He's getting his nose broken by Frank Sanchez before he fights Anthony Joshua in Miami.
And he's on the Pat McAfee show.
And we're also living in a world where Dan Canobbio is a reality television star.
Yeah, which I think back in what year was that? Probably like maybe early 2000s. I believe you sent in a tape to Real World, right? I'm dating ourselves here. You definitely
Singled Out was my show.
You wanted to be on any one of those shows, I'm sure.
Any one of those shows, any one of them. But I will be part of the Jake versus Joshua Fight House. MVP is putting together like an all access content type of house with some content creators, some of the event models at MVP. And I got a lot of messages yesterday. Dan, what the heck is this? Dan, what
do
is
they want
this?
You to be like the bouncer? I don't understand. Like, what, you can check IDs on as they come in. What are they?
No,
they
I'm got part of the show. For? Damn it!
What do they have you there for?
I'm part of this. I'm right in the middle. I'm right in the middle of this.
Yeah, because
right,
you're the bouncer. Right. You're going to be checking IDs to make sure everyone's above board.
I don't know. Apparently, I don't even know what I signed up for, but it's all access. Look, you know how many times like we'll be in Vegas And we're like, oh, man, we'll be in Vegas. And I'll be like, oh, man, I wish we had a GoPro attached to our head so we could show everyone how cool it is on Fight Week, all the Fight Week access we have. That's what I think this is. That's what MVP okay. Fight House is. It's going to be like an all-access look behind the scenes in Miami as we get ready for Jake and Joshua. So keep it locked, MVP HQ and Most Valuable Prospects Instagram account, to see Unc Dan in the Fight House with Lil Man Jay.
Yeah, I didn't know anybody else that was on there. But, I mean, why
You know
why
Lucas Body, 135.
I know him, yes. Yeah, I know him. I like him. He's on there.
He's good.
There a house? You said Fight House. Is there a house, or is that just the kind of name?
Listen, Chris, that's for you to find out, and for me to know, for you to find out.
Okay. All right. You're right.
You're right. Let's get into the voicemails. Here we go. And we thank you, everyone, who leaves us beautiful voicemails. And here they are.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Chris. It's your number one fan from the Northwest, Hector from Boise, Idaho. Listen, man. Did y'all watch that press conference with Shakur and Teofimo? Man, if you're trying to get the fans excited, that was not it, man. Am I tripping? It just seemed so dull, you know? It felt forced. You know, both guys were trying to talk kind of, you know, ish, but it sounded a little like, I don't know, it just sounded cringy, man. This might be fight of the cringe, man. I don't know, you know, I hate to say it, but I think, you know, Dan might be right. You know, it might just be a boring fight. I mean,
all right, Boise, Idaho, in the house. Appreciate the call. Did you watch the presser? Because I intended to go, but I got sidetracked. But I went back and watched it last night. Did you catch any of the clips?
I saw clips. Yes.
So I watched it. I watched it back, and. A couple thoughts. Like, it's hard to drum up the animosity. I believe they're friendly. Like, I watched the thing that Ring put out afterwards with Versace, Rick Reno, the Versace podcast. It just gave him a pop. I don't know why. But they went on the show, and they just talked about how much they knew each other growing up, how much they respected each other, how much they were signed with Top Rank. There was a little bit of animosity, a little bit of jealousy in the terms that Teofimo was moved a lot better than Shakur was. One is still technically with the promotion. One is not. Had a famous exit. Yeah, I thought it was a little cringe, but look who we're dealing with. It's Shakur Stevenson and Teofimo, and Teofimo's dad, who was the star of the presser. Yeah, cringe is the word, but let's hope it's a good fight.
It's also 2025 going on 2026. We live in the world of cringe. I mean, the cringe sells. Cringe gets clicks. Cringe gets eyes. And I say this all the time. Marvin Hagler is rolling over in his grave of all the cringy ass fighters that are out there that are juking and jiving for cameras. It's just, and clicks. It's absurd the world we live in. But at the end of the day, these are two super talented guys fighting in their absolute physical primes. Say whatever you will about this fight, whether it's going to be Hagler Hearns round one, or if it's going to be, you know, a slow fight, but regardless, I think this is a very, very good matchup, and I think it's going to be a good fight. I'm going to be watching every round on bated breath, because I do think stylistically and skill wise, these guys are going to be matching wits at such a high level. It'll be must watch, regardless of if it's a barn burner or not.
Hagler did do that right guard commercial. That was pretty badass. Wasn't cringe.
Not cringe. Nothing that guy did was cringe. Everything these guys do was cringe. That's just the world we live in. It is what it is. Sign of the time.
Yeah, so Teofimo Sr. was kind of the one drumming it all up. If it wasn't for him, it would have been very, very subdued. He was saying some crazy, my son didn't have air. God, I'm getting really good at impressions.
That was pretty
my
good.
My son.
Thank you. That was good.
I thought he was in the room.
That's what I said. I was like, Sr.?
My son had no air in his lungs for Cambyses. Still can't get Cambosos' name right. My son had no air in his lungs. What are you talking? You're gonna quit, Shakur. You ain't shit. And then Teofimo says, "Jiggle," and Shakur goes, "Jiggle, jiggle my balls."
I saw that.
That was the highlight of the presser.
Low light. That was the low light.
Low light. But there, what I did like, and I expressed it my opinion on Twitter, Shakur would not say that Teofimo was a bum. Did not say he's a low-level fighter. Shakur said Teofimo is a high-level fighter, but I am just a step above. Therefore, if Shakur beats Teofimo, he gets all the credit for beating a high-level. He ain't no bum, like we hear all the time. And I got some pushback because they're like, well, I was like, this is what Floyd did all the time. Well, explain when he talked shit about Gotti as a C-level fighter. I was like, yeah, that was before Floyd became Money May. That was when he was still Pretty Boy Floyd.
Yep. He didn't figure it out yet. And Shakur taking a page out of the Floyd book and bigging up his opponent, I think is a very smart thing. And I don't understand why more people don't do that. But Shakur is learning. But also, I think it has to show the level of respect that he has for Teofimo, like you opened with.
Yeah, there's a lot of respect here, and that's fine. Like, listen, like, I think we need to throw away the dreams of, like, fights crossing over into the mainstream. I think Ryan versus Tank was maybe the last one that really crossed over. Maybe a heavyweight fight, but those are happening in Saudi at, like, 3 in the afternoon now, so those are hard to sell. Like, Ryan versus Tank, I think, was the last really crossover type of fight. We just have to start making fights for boxing fans. Keep the fans we already have and add on a few here and there. So I wasn't expecting like some grandiose like sell job from these two guys. It's an awesome fight that all boxing fans are going to watch. And I think it's going to be good. It got me pumped up for it. Just seeing them face to face was like, damn, like I can't believe this is really happening.
Yeah, even when they were talking about this fight being signed, I'm like, no way, it's not happening. I'm still like kind of in shock and awe that these guys are gonna fight, especially they're doing it at the Garden, open up the year. I mean, it's this is good. This is good for boxing.
2026 is going to be a huge year. All right, next voicemail.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Dan. My name is Ethan. I'm from Edmonton, Alberta. Thanks for taking my call. The only question that I had was, after this fight between Shakur and Teofimo, where do you guys put them? Where would you put the respective winner afterwards? Because I heard Shakur on the Cigar Talk podcast, shout out my guy Najee, and he said that he would put himself above Bam and Inoue, so that would place him around that third place. So just wanted to hear where you guys would put them. Thanks for taking my call, and yeah, I appreciate it.
What do you think?
I mean, I assume he's talking pound for pound. Where?
Yeah, Shakur. Shakur thinks he jumps up to three.
He's wrong. As good as he is, and obviously we know that, there needs to be more work done. And it's not a knock on him. It's just the guy can't get the fights with the big names. This is a big one. This is a good one. This is an important one. He gets this win, and yeah, you're talking about him in the top five, but getting in front of Inoue, who has been dominant for so long and so many weight divisions and keeps beating really top guys, I think that overlooks how good the opponents of Naio Inoue has been, overlooks the opponents of Bam, you know, the guys that he's fought. So, yeah, I wouldn't put him that high, but yeah, no, the winner of this fight in terms of their level and skill, absolutely is in high regard and pound for pound, but in terms of accomplishments, there's still more to be done.
Yeah, I always say that boxers, you guys have to be delusional in order to be successful. It's not a team sport. It's a one-man band. You have to have crazy thoughts to be great and remind yourself that I am the best. I am this. I am that. Shakur jumping up to top three, you know, it's just, of course he's going to think that. I think the winner of Shakur versus Teofimo has a case for top five.
Yeah. I just said that. I agree.
And I wasn't listening to anything you said. No, I'm just kidding. I was pulling up the Ring magazine top 10 because if you follow me long enough, you know, I don't love pound for pound, but you know, I get roped into it. But I think number one is Crawford. Number two is Usyk. Number three is Inoue. I think that's cemented. And I'm starting to think that Bam is on that Mount Rushmore now, top four. I think Bam is there because Bivol has been inactive. Better BF has been inactive. Juto Nakatani rising the ranks. Shakur at 8, according to Ring. Benavidez at 9. So I think that top four, Crawford, Usyk, Inoue, Bam, solidified. I think the five spot is up for grabs because I think Bivol has been a little inactive, and I think the pound for pound list has now turned into what have you done for me lately type of list. It's like it doesn't matter what you've done. Like Bivol beating Canelo and BetterBF should probably have him way high, like in the top five and solidified. But now it's become a thing where if you're inactive or if you haven't fought or someone has fought more recently than you, they're going to jump the line. But Shakur, if Shakur wins, I think he goes to top five. Teofimo's not even in the top 10, and that's something Senior was pretty upset about. They have Haney over Teofimo and Benavidez. So regardless of where you put them on this mythical list, I think the winner of this fight is going to make noise because it is easily both of their best wins, and I believe it's their best win. I believe that if Teofimo beats Shakur, it's a better win than when he beat Lomachenko in 2020. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. But also, I'm gonna retort with, if Teofimo wins, I don't make him number five. Shakur wins, I make him number five, because that Kambosos loss really hurts him, and I can't, like,
Teofimo solving the Shakur riddle
is huge. Still doesn't make him number five.
That's crazy.
But Shakur wins, he's number five, and the only reason is because, like I said, what I said about Bam, and Inoue.
But in terms of that win, like Teofimo beats Shakur, it's a better win than him beating Lomachenko.
Yeah, he's fighting a younger prime guy that's not in his weight class per se, but is closer to his prime weight class than Lomachenko was. Lomachenko is just not a 35-pounder.
All right, that's that there. Let's move on with another one here. I got to figure it out. I'm producing today. I'm on the ones and twos.
Hey, fellas, how you doing? Hopefully you're not too late here. So Tom from the Boston area, listen to the show every week. Chris, listen to the audiobook, so you want to be a fighter. Awesome stuff. So here's my question related to the Jake Paul, Anthony Joshua fight, where there's a lot of talk, trying to explain to my friends, I don't think there's any chance there's any kind of clause around Anthony Joshua backing off. And Chris, probably more directed to you, but it's almost like an insulting kind of thing when a novice comes into your gym and says, hey, I want to get in the ring with you, right? It's been around enough boxing culture that the guys that are the alpha in a gym, they kind of get insulted by that. Now, it's different if you approach it like, hey, I want to get in and learn from you, different story. The boxing community is the best in the world for that. But if you come at it with a little bit of arrogance, I think, you know, typically what I've seen is guys like you will want to show them you don't belong anywhere near me or in this ring, and I'm going to make you feel the pain of your arrogant approach and attitude. So I kind of feel like that is more how Anthony Joshua is going to approach this. It's a sanctioned fight. It goes on his record. He's a prideful guy. He's a huge puncher. He's a mean guy. He's had a lot of his, he's had a lot of his heart questioned. And I think any kind of success Jake Paul has in there, people are going to hold it against him. So I think he's going to show no mercy. And I'm trying to explain to my friends, he is going to do everything he can to hurt this guy, embarrass him, and violently knock him out. So Chris, thoughts on that? And again, partially because I think Jake hasn't come at him all that respectfully, not that he should, but he's actually talking like he thinks he can beat the guy. So I think
that was a good voicemail.
Really good. And really, really understands what boxing gym culture is like, because he's absolutely right. If you come into my gym and you're like, hey, I want to spar you, guess what? We're putting your gloves on immediately and you're getting your ass kicked. Bad. But this is not a boxing gym culture. And to your point, if Joshua does what you think he's going to do or should do, this fight's 30 seconds long. And that's just the reality of this. And if it goes more than a round, then Joshua either didn't take him seriously or Jake literally just hightailed and ran around the ring. I don't see any way possible that this fight can be competitive. If Joshua goes out there and does what you're saying he's going to do. Now, if that's, again, I don't know how this is going to go. I didn't even think this fight was going to happen. And now we're a week away and it seems like it's actually going to happen. These guys are going to be in the ring together. But I don't know, man. I'm getting really skeptical whether Joshua is going to take this seriously and really go out there and fight like to the highest of his own personal abilities. Which is,
what do you mean? What do you think he's going to do?
He's just too smiley. And you talk about how mean he is. He's just too smiley. This whole lead up.
He might He might turn that off starting Monday.
He might. But I don't know.
He's a happy warrior, Joshua.
No such thing. Happy warrior. I wasn't that happy, you know, and I don't know.
I agree with our caller that there is no clauses. I've been down this road.
No, I don't think so.
But there's no clauses, and especially, you know, Joshua's a very prideful guy, like you said, and in matchroom, it's a sanctioned fight, it's a federal offense. There's so much eyeballs right now on sports when it comes to gambling and fixing and point shaving. It's just an insane thing to think that they would – Netflix involved? I think Netflix is getting in the business of doctoring fights. So that whole notion is thrown out the window. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting because I honestly think it's like a no win for Joshua. If we're in like the third or fourth round and like and Jake has landed a few shots to the body, gets in and is moving his legs, and he's it's only an 8-round fight, so you know he's showing that his legs are still there, and Joshua just hasn't found him yet. Like, it's going to be in real time, we're going to start questioning if what Anthony Joshua has left, and we're going to start questioning a lot of things. You know, if he takes him out in one round, I think that's what a lot of people expect. It's minus money for a Anthony Joshua stoppage in the first round. Like, I don't remember ever seeing that. Like,
crazy.
a big enough fight where you'll see odds on DraftKings or one of these books. Like, I'm sure you would get minus money on a first round knockout. Some, like, you know, first fight of the night on a card and who knows where. But a fight of this magnitude, like, the money is pouring in. Like, Vegas thinks that Joshua's going to take out Jake in the first round. And
yeah,
like,
and most boxing people do too.
Yeah, so I'm intrigued by it. I'm so there's just everyone's gonna be watching. I mean, it's on Netflix. It's very easy accessible. Holiday parties. It's gonna get up there, man, in 70-80 million range, I think. And I have some really cool things I'll be doing on fight night. Some really crazy stuff. So I'm not fighting. So we'll get that out, and I'll be out of the house, the fight house. They're letting me out of the fight house for the party. Just slipped a little bit for the fight night. So it's gonna be crazy. We'll all be watching down in Miami near you, Chris. You ready for that?
Near me, but very far away, because I will not be there. I will not. I don't go to Miami. Florida.
I'm staying on South Beach, dude.
That's gonna be crazy. You're gonna have fun.
Fountain Blue.
You're gonna spend a lot of money. And you're gonna have fun.
I don't spend. They reimburse.
We'll see. We'll talk on Monday. We'll look on Monday and see how much money.
Well,
you spend.
The things that, yeah, they reimburse certain things. Like,
yeah, when you went to the strip club at 2 yeah. in the morning and you're buying bottles for people trying to show off, and then you're like,
yeah, I don't think Nikisa and the MVP finance department is going to expense anything that happens after midnight.
That's what I mean. That's where I meant by the money's going to be spent. I'm not talking about fight week or fight day or anything like that.
Speaking of partying.
Yo, what's up, guys? Calling from Toronto, Canada. She wanted to get your opinion on, you know, the Ryan Garcia and Mario Barrios fight. It's approaching pretty quick. And, you know, last weekend we saw that Joe Goosen is training Barrios for this fight. How do you think that changes the fight, how it's going to go, you know, potentially the outcome? And how do you see Ryan, like, dealing with someone who kind of understands his style? Because, you know, we've seen that Ryan hasn't really changed much from the amateurs and over the years. And if anything, he's become more reliant on the left hook and less reliant on actually boxing, even though I think he can actually, you know, really, really box if you watch his earlier fights. So, yeah, just calling to ask that. Thanks.
Good question, man. Did you see that on the telecast of the Pitbull Cruz fight? It was a little nugget that Joe Goosen is now training Mario Barrios, and it adds some intrigue to the fight. Ryan Garcia and Barry Barrios, which I think is going down in February 21st, I want to say, in Vegas. Do you think much of it? Is it more like something that we can talk about and something that Ryan Garcia will just keep harping on to sell the fight?
I don't think this fight needs more intrigue. I think it's intriguing enough because of the characters that are involved. And it's a title fight. Mario Barrios coming off of two title defenses via draw, which has got to be a record.
Roach.
He's defended his title twice with draws. I don't know how many times that's ever happened. And you got Ryan Garcia, who's hasn't had a win in this weight class, going right to a world title. Very interesting in terms of how this fight is coming together in terms of that. But in terms of styles, you know, great. I think great observation from our caller there. And the thing about Goosen joining Barrios, the only really thing to really think about is how much Goosen has seen Ryan firsthand and the way that he approaches fights and training camps, which we've heard, you know, hearsay.
Well Goosen didn't train him, Chris. It was a collaboration.
Right.
Remember that?
Well, because Ryan essentially trains himself, and he likes to be in his living room, you know, with his friends holding pads for him. Does he even spar? Because I know guys who don't spar. I know high level fighters that spar very, very little for fights.
Wow.
So there are
Is there an advantage to that?
You're fresh, I guess, but Ryan's talented. He doesn't need, and you know, the fighters that I've seen that didn't spar boxing wise, you know, just a very physically gifted guys. Ryan's one of those as well. But he also, he has a vast amateur background and pedigree. So he has that to fall back on. And Barrios, man, he's a grinder when he shows up. And in terms of who's training him, I don't think it matters, because if the guy doesn't pull the trigger, which he's known not to do, it doesn't matter what the coach is telling you. So yeah, I mean, intriguing fight. I don't know if that nugget of information really makes that big of a difference in either way, because these guys are so unpredictable and inconsistent. You have no clue what's going to happen on fight night.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's just like a battle of two guys that you just have so much expectations for, or had expectations for. What about Joe Goosen and Barrios? You know, Barrios is a guy that I've said, you know, can't get out of first or second gear. You're always expecting more. He has all the physical tools. Do you think Goosen, who is an offensive-minded trainer, can get that out of Barrios? Or is it just kind of too late for Barrios in his career to make big changes?
It's like I said, if Mario doesn't listen, it doesn't matter who's talking, because the guy just doesn't pull the trigger sometimes. He shows up and just ho-hums it through. Sometimes he looks like a badass, and sometimes he looks like you said, he's still in first gear. And it doesn't seem like it matters who's telling him what, or what he has in front of him. He just shows up that way. So I don't know if the change of trainers is really going to make a difference, especially at this stage of his career. I think this is more just a ploy to be like, oh, he used to train you. Well, now I got him. I think it's more that than anything.
Yeah, you see, Ryan said that Goosen was the mole in the Gervonta Davis fight week, or the fight meetup.
With the rib?
Broken rib. He said it was only my dad and Goosen that knew about the broken rib, and my dad wouldn't do that.
Also the fighter who did it, who is a Pro Box TV fighter.
What's that guy's name? He's got a crazy long name.
Yeah.
Tukit Numbayar?
Yeah.
Ryan. Remember he put out that video? Ryan, I'm sorry. I broke your rib. I'm telling you, man. That Ryan lead up for Gervonta and that fight and the fallout, that was some crazy stuff for a pretty ho-hum type of one-sided fight.
Yeah. I wonder what the lead up to this one's going to be. Mario is very, very humble, quiet guy. I don't expect much out of him.
Ryan's doing everything.
Yeah, Ryan does everything. Well, sometimes, because he didn't do anything for the fight with Rollies. And I'm not sure how much of that was his fault or the promotion, but
I think the Ryan that we saw in the Haney lead up with manic, depressant, I don't want to see that ever again. That was I felt exploitative. I felt like we were watching a guy that was bad.
On the edge.
I mean, it did phenomenal business, but I don't want to see that from a personal standpoint. But then he had like a correction for the fight with Rolly, where I feel like he was trying to say, hey, I'm not that crazy anymore. And he was like too quiet. He was too reserved. He was not good in the ring. He was injured. And now we're seeing somewhere in the middle with Ryan where, you know, he's lashing out on Twitter. He's doing a lot of these streams with these streamers that I think is really smart. I think Tio Fimo did that too, where he's doing live streams with the top streamers to get his name out there, Ryan. He's very smart when it comes to that. So I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, I don't want him to be crazy. I don't want him to be dull, Ryan, because we need these guys in the sport popularity-wise. So somewhere in the middle. So I think it should be an intriguing fight. I think we'll all be watching on February 21st. Maybe we'll be there. Maybe we'll be there.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe.
Hey, guys. Big fans. I want to see if you guys agree with me on this. I think the decline of boxing, especially the state of boxing right now, people are a little too exaggerate how bad it is. I think right now we're actually in a really good place. Now that we have the Saudis involved and everything the past few years, we're really getting all the fights we want. Besides, like, Fury Joshua, I feel like we're getting all the fights that we want. But the issue, especially in America, is we don't have the broadcasting partners. I think during the decline of boxing in the 2010s, we had the broadcasting partners, the HBOs, the Showtimes, ESPN, but we weren't getting the fights. But now we have all these fights, but we can't get Americans to really see them because most of them are on DAZN. And I think DAZN does a great job, but I looked into it. They have over 20 million subscribers, but only 800,000 in America. And you're just not going to be able to grow boxing in America unless we get these fights on streaming softwares that they have, places that they can see it. Like Paramount has a UFC deal. They're going to have it on CBS also. Back on HBO, things like that. We see that there's the interest when we have big fights.
I think we got his point there. Very good point. Very, very astute point there. And it shows boxing can't get out of its own way, Chris. When we get the fights, no one's watching them. When we have the attention of fans via HBO and 24/7 and Showtime, which pretty much everyone had for a large portion before streaming came in, and we weren't getting the fights that we wanted. It's just the nature of this sport. It's disorganized. It's the Wild West. There's a lot of hands in the pot. Everyone wants power. So if you're a boxing fan, you'll figure out how to watch the fights. And we're getting what he said there was the most important thing. We're getting the fights now. It's up to you to figure out how to watch them.
Yeah, I think he's been echoing a point that we've been making, that boxing is not in a bad place. We are getting the fights we want. Guys are getting paid. The ball is moving. I'm going to push back a little bit on the network thing, because a lot of the reasons we didn't get the fights that we wanted to make was because of the networks. The networks they had their individual deals with fighters and they weren't going to cross over.
Right.
You know, you got Floyd on Showtime. He's never going to fight whoever on HBO. He's never going to fight Golovkin on HBO. Like, you're just not going to, that crossover is never going to happen. And So that was the opposite side of the street was a really big deal back then when you had the networks involved. So now we're able to see these fights happen more often. Problem is, where do we see them? And it's a great point. I think another thing that also was left out that was really hurting us is we're not having like big live gates, and we're not having big events on the soil for people to go to. Boxing is different when you go to it live. Boxing is different when it's in person. Boxing is different when there's a crowd involved. You can't take that out of it, because that's a major, major part of the sport. So we need more stars. We need more stars in general, but we need the stars to fight each other, and then you do it on American soil.
Well, good point. Shakur Teofimo would be a case study in that.
Great star versus star matchup in their prime on New York, on American soil, and at our best venue in the country.
But it is on pay-per-view. It's on DAZN pay-per-view.
It is. It is. But it's if you're going to have an allotment of money for the year of pay-per-view buys, That's going to be one you're going to pay for, even though it's in January. You would save up for it if it was December. Like that's the kind of fight you pay for.
Yeah, you would think. But the problem is that, you know, they have the it's going to be part of that DAZN Ultimate deal, which I think is like $500. So you're going to get like the hardcore fans are probably going to buy Shakur versus Tio. But he's, you know, this guy was talking about like, you know, the big time crossing over and getting people to watch. That's just, those days are over. You know, you have to have
extreme sport.
Yeah, you just have to kind of accept that. And we'll see. Now, Zuffa just announced that they're going to be Zuffa Boxing has a date. I think it's in January 24th on Paramount. So, you know, Paramount isn't the biggest streaming service, but it is a pretty big one. I think it's bigger than DAZN. I mean, I don't know how that guy got those numbers, dude, because I think that's the biggest secret in boxing, is how many subscribers does DAZN have in the U.S.? No one knows. So he said 800,000. He probably just did a simple Google search. I don't know how accurate that is, but I know DAZN is huge around the world. So that's one thing. But in the States, it's very hard to get a fight. It's very hard to follow a fight, and especially when ESPN went away. When ESPN left, that was a huge void. That was huge, because you could just flip through the channels or ESPN Plus. So many people have ESPN Plus because there's that bundle that you have Hulu and something else.
You lost every boomer when you went to streaming. Losing ESPN, you've lost every last boomer that watched boxing.
That, and you lost like having it on in a bar, or like you're at a bar and there's like a college football game on from 8 to 10. And then at 10 o'clock, we get, top-ranked boxing from the West Coast, and it's a banger of a fight, and all of a sudden you have a fan. Those days are gone, unfortunately, but that guy, he nailed it on the head. Here we go.
Hey, y'all. This is Ryan from New York calling in with a question on the business side of boxing, which I find endlessly fascinating. It's such a marketable and entertaining sport that just shoots itself in the foot constantly. Was recently trying to find somewhere to go watch the ring card, like a bar or a pub or something. Was like trying to organize a group of my friends to go into the city, watch it at a bar, have a good time. And I could not find a single bar that would be playing this thing on the TV, including Jack Dempsey's, which is a Manhattan boxing bar founded by Jack Dempsey. Used to play fights, used to show this stuff. They show every UFC card, but they no longer air boxing. And so my question to you guys is, like, when it comes to the business side of things, do you know if there is some sort of nuance to, like, a licensing rights with pay-per-view or something that makes it so that these places, which will show every UFC card, aren't airing boxing? Because I would love to watch boxing at a bar, but I cannot figure it out in the New York area. Thanks.
That's annoying.
That was a good timing on that question, on that voicemail. So we finished talking producing. About bars.
It's called producing, Chris. Wow. It's called producing.
Look at you. Look at you, buddy.
I line them up, and then I have you knock them down, the pins. But, yeah you got to go to Diamante's bar, David Diamante's bar, Cigar Lounge. They have him playing. Here's the thing, like, we just talked about the zone, right? I don't think sports bars have the zone package. Another thing, too, is this was a pay-per-view, so I'm not 100% sure if you could order it, if you have to order it through the zone, or you can order it off of your regular cable. So, and that's up to the bar owner to do that, or I don't know exactly there. Another thing, too, is, like, we don't, it's not a mainstream sport, so there's no incentive for a bar owner to order it or play it, or there's not enough people in the bar that want to watch it. He brings up UFC. Like, I was at a bar a couple of months ago, and it was my first time at a bar watching a UFC event, and it was, like, insane. It was, like, they had the sound up. It was almost like you were in a giant living room with all your friends. Everyone was locked into the fights, reacting. It was, like, a pretty cool experience, because when I think of watching a fight at a bar, I'm like, I'd rather watch it at home. But it was a cool element of it. But I think it has to do with the fact that the zone, these bar owners don't have it, or they don't know about the big fights. Because Ryan Tank, we'll go back to that one, that was on in a lot of bars. Spence Crawford was on in bars. I think, you know, Netflix, I think, just announced a deal, or MVP just announced a deal that Jake Joshua will be played in bars. So I think it's, like, the magnitude. I think it's a lot of different things. But you just got to find the right bar in New York, at least.
I just think it goes down to the fan base. We just don't have enough people who will clamor for stuff like that and show up for it. Boxing fans and UFC fans are different. UFC fans want a chaotic environment to watch their fights. Boxing fans generally don't. The kinds of people that would be in bars, more of them are UFC fans than boxing fans at this point. It's fan base. As much as the business lets us fans down, the fans let down the sport as well, because we just don't show up and show out with enough voice and enough numbers. Because if we did all stand up and push for these places that have these fights, there would be.
I remember 2011, Floyd was fighting Victor Ortiz, and I was working in Manhattan at the time. And I got done with work, and I really wanted to watch the fight, and, like, I couldn't order it because I just didn't have the whatever. So I'm running through the city, and I'm trying to, like, find a bar, and I think it was Jack Doyle's bar, and it was an overflow of people. Like, that's how big Mayweather was. Like, people were outside of the doors, and I watched Mayweather Ortiz all four rounds of it. Right? Is that how much it lasted before he headbutted him? I watched it through the window of the bar outside on the street. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. But that was just, like, it is kind of cool to watch. People watch it in movie theaters. Like, I've never done that because, you know, we're always either on our couch or at the fight. So it's hard for me to kind of, think about it from that perspective of a fan. Movie theater seems pretty cool.
Movie theater seems really cool. Like a closed circuit TV movie theater. Like they used 80s to be back vibes. In the day. I don't know. I just always watch fights with all my friends and family in my living room. Like, that's, like, we go to fight parties. That was always a thing in high school.
Love
even
those.
In grade school, it's fight parties, fight party, fight
yeah,
party.
I hosted, like, that, those.
Dude, even in high school, everybody comes in, you throw $20 in the hat, and then we all watch a fight.
That's the best. That is the best. Those are the best nights. I miss those nights. This is a crazy, crazy voicemail.
So basically, Muhammad Ali, did you ever get a chance to meet him when he was alive? And if so, yes, what was he like? And if you did meet him, did he have his Parkinson's at the time? Or if not, he was slightly healthier cognitively. Thank you. Have a good day.
Kind of crazy. How old does he think we are?
Is just thinking that. I'm like, when he mentioned the Parkinson thing, I'm like, pretty much he had Parkinson's my entire life, definitely my adult life. But yeah, it could have been
in the 80s.
Even in the late 80s, I think he was still already jammed up mentally. But no, I never met him. Were you ever around?
No, my dad met him a bunch of times. I never met him. My dad met him with Joe Frazier once when he was working at Wide World of Sports, I want to say. They had them both on the set, and then maybe another picture he had with him. But yeah, I always wanted to. That's like a top five. Like, lose your mind if he's you ever met.
Yeah. Well, I will say this, and I'm going to give a little plug to Fighters Heaven in Pennsylvania. If you have the opportunity to go there, if you're a huge Muhammad Ali fan, which you sound like you are, go to his training camp, which is now open to the public, and it turned into a museum and an Airbnb. Super, super great experience in a nice little cute town in rural Pennsylvania. But yeah, it's worth the trip for sure. Fighters Heaven.
You feel his aura there. You're not going to meet him because he's no longer with us, but you feel his. I felt it when you sent me the pics, bro.
Yeah. As close as you can get to meeting him is that at this point. So if you really are that interested in being close to the great one, that's the way to go.
You know what's crazy? He passed away when he was, 74, I want to say. That is so young.
Yeah.
But he felt old because of what the Parkinson's did to his body. He was basically a mute for like the last 10 years. But imagine we had Muhammad Ali still today. And throughout that whole time where he was, you know, when the Parkinson's really started to take over, he would have been everywhere. Ambassador for boxing. Everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, look at Bob Arum. He's, what is he, 90? He just turned
94.
94. That's what I thought. You know, like, that's the same era. You know, those guys could still be around. I mean, but they are aging out. There's no question. Bob is not around much anymore. You know, George Foreman just passed. You know, so that's another one. So that era is fading.
It's like
out.
Tyson. We got to really savor Tyson, and he's kind of oversaturating himself a little bit now. He's doing everything. I've just go to his Instagram, and he's just like doing one man shows now. He's doing appearances. He's really collecting it on his celebrity, which is great. But yeah, that generation sadly is, man. Now we're looking at like. I'm trying to get morbid here. We're looking at like Sugar Ray Leonard, and that era is getting up there in age. You know, Hagler's
gone. Marvin's already gone. Marvin's already gone.
That one hurt. That one really hurt. Yeah. That one hurt.
Tommy's still around. Ray's still around. Roberto Duran is still around and kicking. He looks good. Really
Larry
good.
Holmes.
Larry's still around. Yep.
I saw Larry Holmes at a fight recently. Crazy, man. Crazy.
He still looks like he knocks some suckers out.
Larry Holmes?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big boy. He's a hoss. I remember shook his hand. Like his hand was so freaking big. Mm-hmm. Damn. It's questions for you.
Hello. So basically, do you or Chris see any similarities between Abdullah Mason and Wilfred Benitez? Both were young when they won their first championship. I had to Google this. His nickname was like El Radar. Benitez was way before my time. I'm 25. But boxing experts say his like career is like bad due to his brain damage. Benitez brain damage because, well, brain damage is pretty bad and you don't want that. But, you know, you're a boxer and you sign up for it. Both Mason and Benitez were seen as the next superstar if I have my facts right. Basically, do you see similarities in like jabs or personality or footwork or head movement or public perception of future success?
Great one.
Good one.
I was the same guy from the Ali. So he
oh, okay.
This is a 25-year-old who's a student of the game.
Young guy. Yes and no. Simple answer. Yes, because of the youth, how young he is at winning a title, the potential that everybody sees, the exciting nature of his style. But in terms of if you break down their style, no. Wilfred Benitez was a phenomenal jabber. I mean, an absolute scientist with the jab. If you ever want to see some of the best, most dynamic jabbing contests you'll ever see, him and Sugar Ray Leonard is one of my favorite fights to study, and I've watched countless times.
Yeah, that's a
they
good one.
Used every single kind of jab possible, just working each other or trying to find a way in because they were both so evenly matched, and they were both such physical wizards. So yeah, in terms of their style and in terms of class, I don't see them that similarly because I think Benitez was on a much higher level boxing IQ wise than Abdullah. Abdullah maybe has a more physical gifts in terms of physical talent, like raw talent. Yeah. But Benitez way cleaner, way sharper at their comparative age.
Hello guys, this is Brian from Texas. I wanted to ask you guys, who's y'all's favorite Mexican-American fighter of all time? I mean, it could be from the past, it could be from the present. Love the show. Let me know. Thank you.
I think I know where you're going. De La Hoya?
Mexican-American.
Mexican-American.
Oh, yeah, De La Hoya. Because I was thinking Mexican, and I was going to say Salvador Sanchez, but...
Mexican-American.
Mexican-American is Oscar De La Hoya, yeah, for sure.
Vargas. I liked Vargas.
Oscar when they fought was a god in my house. Like, my grandfather loved him. My grandfather loved three fighters. Well, five fighters. So he loved, and I'm going to go chronologically, he loved Alexis Arguello. He loved Sugar Ray Leonard. He loved Mike Tyson. He loved Oscar De La Hoya. And he loved Roy Jones Jr. Those are my grandfather's five favorite fighters.
Grandfather Algieri's Mount Rushmore.
No, this is Colombo. This is my mom's side, the Argentinian side. But he's what got me into boxing, and his Rushmore was badass. But yeah, he loved De La Hoya. That whenever he fought at my house, it was a huge deal.
People forget how big De La Hoya really was.
Oh, dude,
people don't forget because people get it, but I think we underestimate because now we look at him as the silly promoter. Clap back. Hey, how's it going? It's time for Clap Back Thursdays.
It's brilliant though. I love it.
Yeah, but like
that, so you gotta work on that. That impression a little more. You're much better at Teofimo Senior than De La Hoya.
Really? I thought my Oscar was like number one.
In the past, it's been good before. That last one wasn't very good.
But. Did you see my Aram video?
I did.
Yeah, this is Bob Champine. I actually played that for him once. He was like offended.
Oh no.
He was like, get this out of here. He's like, I give it a 2 out of 10. He was not, I wouldn't say offended, but he was not impressed.
Yikes.
He was just like, what is that? He's like, you don't know where are you from? I said, I'm from Long Island. He goes, no, you're not. I said, he goes, I live in Brooklyn. He goes, that's not Brooklyn. And then I got offended. So that we had an offended off.
You should have told him that you were friends with me. Me and Bob go way back.
Yeah, this was 2018 when I first started doing this. I had the audacity, I had the courage to play this.
Young and fresh, you were.
Me in my apartment, I put the filter on my face with the Snapchat filter of Aram's face. Champions. Because he doesn't say champion, Aram. He goes, champions.
There's a couple words that he says that are a little funny. Like he
promoted.
Joe DeGuardia. You said Joe DeGuardia. I promoted. How's that DeGuardia?
So Aram came out and wrote a letter about opposing the new Ali Act.
I mean...
I think they actually made it confusing on purpose. He is in favor of the original Ali Act, not the Ali Revival Act,
right?
Which is
right,
what TKO is trying. Yes, right, they're trying to. I think they're trying to. I think they did that on purpose because it's hard to explain. Yeah, so go check, read that because I thought it was really good from Aram. What else? We got a few more before we say goodbye.
Hey guys, it's Alex. Love the show. Dan, go ahead and spar with Shakur for content. But what I want to say, I don't know if it's a hot take or a question. The biggest change, there's a lot of changes in boxing right now. The biggest change to me is the activity level of boxers. You know, the sanctioning bodies, mandatory schedule, the way promoters built fights and scheduled events throughout the year is all built on fighters fighting 3 to 4 times a year. But now the fighters only fight 1 to 2 times a year. Mandatories get built up. Fighters, you know, they don't want every single fight to be a tough fight, but when you only fight 1 or 2 times a year, fans expect that to count for something, so we don't want any more soft touches. Do you think there's a middle ground that can happen between, hey, when guys just fight 4 or 5 times a year, they might get 1 mandatory, then 3 voluntary defenses, and put on, you know, have maybe 1 or 2 soft tune-ups or whatever, and then 2 big fights compared to now where guys fight 1, maybe 2 times a year, and 1 year might be a mandatory, then the next year it's a big fight. Do you think there's a middle ground? Because activity changing of fighters just seems like the biggest change in the catalyst for everything that is changing in boxing. Like I said, love the show. And Dan, hop in that ring with Shakur for the content.
No, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, Chris, you can't force guys to fight. Number
no,
one.
You can't.
And number two. I'm not going to get it. Twice a year makes it a little easier to train.
that's you know what I mean? That. So this
gives
is,
you a lot I'm, of time.
I'm going to say this. Naya Inoue and Bam Rodriguez are going against the grain. They're fighting with the old school. They stay busy and they fight tough fights every time. So it's not impossible. So, and it shouldn't fall on the fighter to act like a champion. You know, your champions should act like champions, instead of, you know, picking and choosing when they fight. But the elephant in the room is that your favorite fighter's not clean and they need time off and they can't fight that often because of the cycles of the drugs that they're doing.
But not everyone is on them.
No, not everyone. But that is part of it.
That is a factor. It is a factor. That's what I was alluding to.
And there's also, I had to pick it up, what you were putting down. But also, I think sanctioning bodies are, it's a two-tiered system of how they enforce who has to fight and who has to pay and who has to do that. It should be a standard across the board. You don't defend your title in a year, in a calendar year. If you only defend it once, you should be feeling the pressure. You've got to be able to defend that belt multiple times a year. So I think enforceability, I think having some teeth, I think is important. And treating everyone the same, having a standard across the board, which we just do not have in this sport at all. So, but I agree. I think fighters not fighting often is limiting the ability to make stars. I think it's limiting the, ability to really take off for the health of the entire sport. And I think fighters are forced to fight more. The guys who would be good would be better, the Bams and the Naio anyways. And some of these guys who are holding on to undefeated records would probably have losses. And that's not the worst thing in the world. I think we should be okay with guys having losses if they're fighting active, tough fights back to back to back.
Would you, like, say a guy fights four times and like, in a way, like, he's not the best example, but, like, you have two tough ones and then two not so tough ones. Would you rather see two really good fights, or would you rather see two and then two kind of, like, walkovers?
I don't want to see any walkovers. You're a champion. You shouldn't have walkovers.
But I know that. But there's also not enough talent out there. The talent pool isn't that big at some of these weight classes. Like,
well, guys, guys want to fight. Apparently,
fight three times a year, guys.
Yeah, we try and make all these fights.
That's the happy medium.
Guys want to fight.
Yeah. These guys. He was asking, what's the happy medium? Three, like three is fine. Four is, we used to get that all the time. Canelo did four that one year. It's a lot. It's a very taxing sport physically. Like, you got to give up a lot. That's like you're in camp all year. And when Canelo did it, it was remarkable. And I think that really launched him into like another level of superstardom. What was that, 2021 or 2020 into 2021? He fought four times in a calendar year. Guys have done it. Like, De La Hoya has done it and all that. We're not going to get that now because it's almost the norm to fight twice a year. But, you know, we have a streaming service in DAZN that wants to put on events. Like, I'm sure they want that. They could, the streaming services, or the networks can put some more, can lock down on some of these promoters and tell them, get these guys in the ring more. But I think three is not so much to ask for. Like, you know, a title defense, a mandatory, and then a voluntary defense, or a guy that voluntary defense that might not be even that much of a competitive fight. It just also bodes well for you as your brand. Like, you're out there more. You're not doing this ridiculous side stuff, which, sadly, I think also helps. Like, Teofimo fought once last year. Dude is in the prime of his career, wants to be on pound for pound list, wonders why he's not, because, yeah, you only fought once, but then he goes and does streams with Aiden Ross and he's calling fights. And like, I hope they don't think that could help. I hope I don't have to fight twice.
Some people do. I mean, Lamont Roach did a really good job media wise in terms of building his brand, but like, Teofimo actually hurts himself when he goes out there and talks. He's one misstep away from getting people to either fall off on cringe or to literally cancel him for something he said. So you got to be really careful doing that. It's not easy just to build a brand media wise. It's actually easier to go out there and fight and kick ass, especially if you're really good at it, the way a guy like Teofimo is.
Also, they're getting paid too much. We should have let off with that. You know, like, that was a big storyline when we do our year-end show in a couple of weeks. It's like one of the storylines of the year was the running in these fights.
Though, because in the 80s, the guys got paid crazy amounts of money and they still fought often.
Well, yeah, that was way more integrity, way more pride. But they weren't making this. Like, what Ryan Garcia says he got for the Rolly fight was probably almost the same that Sugar Ray Leonard got to fight Hagler.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, maybe the barrier to entry to making that money is the issue. It's
right. You have Saudi. Saudi is giveth and taketh.
It's a two-tiered system once again, though. Certain guys, if Ryan hasn't done anything in order to get, you know, to that level, other than in terms of boxing, in terms of what he's done in the ring, it's just because it's him. It's that two-tiered system. It goes across the board. People get treated differently because of whatever many reasons. But
yeah, these guys are making top dollar. top dollar and they don't exactly deserve it, or it's just limiting them wanting to fight. Well, I could fight twice a year and make as much as I would make in four fights. I don't have to go through the work training camp. I could potentially not lose. I can just chill. we would do that too. So there's a lot of things here. Here's the last one.
Dan, Chris, Trevor from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Thunder up, by the way. Me and my wife just got back from San Antonio as well. Really enjoyed the fight. That was actually my first fight being in an arena. So anyone that doubts Pitbull Cruz is a star, go watch him live. Insane. But my first question is, after I've now gone to an arena, what's my next stop I should go to, New York or Vegas? Second question, with me being a newer boxing fan past several years, been listening to you guys constantly for at least 3 years now, what's the deal with Top Rank? They were so integral in getting me into boxing, kind of the free boxing with my ESPN Plus subscription, and they've just been quiet, at least on their main shows, since July. So what's the deal there? Are we going to hear something early 2026? Thank you, guys. Best boxing show on the planet. Love what you guys do. Peace.
Damn right. Best in the biz. I'm always going to say, I think you're going to say the same thing. Go to the MSG. Like, find a way to go to Shakur Teofimo.
Well, I was going to say go to Vegas first, but since we have Shakur and Teofimo, because we don't have a lot of fights at the Garden anymore, but it's called the Mecca of Boxing for a reason. So definitely the hierarchy is MSG. So if you have the opportunity to go there for that fight, certainly do that. But Vegas is a must-do as well. There's just a lot more to choose from when it comes to Vegas in terms of main events. So yeah, I would say if you can get to Teofimo Shakur, 100% do that one. And then look for the next big Vegas fight and go to there too, because they're different experiences. Very, very different experiences, but both are super necessary for a boxing fan.
Yeah, my first time I went to Vegas, it was like magical. I was like, wow, this really is the fight capital, and everything's all there. And you think about all the crazy fights that have happened here, all the history, the pageantry of Vegas. It's magic. The first time, it still is magic. Every time you go, as much as I can't stand it now, it's still fun when we touch down on that soil. But MSG has got the history. Is just awesome. Like, Ollie Frazier was here. Like, this is insane. So yeah, I would say MSG, Vegas. That's really it in terms of the U.S. Like, there's no other huge venue that maybe like a stadium, but like, we're not doing stadium fights anymore. And I went to Yankee Stadium for Cotto. That was like a one-time thing.
That's a one-off.
I think the Ring Dallas. Now is doing Dallas. Yeah, like a Cowboys stadium, if that ever happens. Expense.
Great arena. Yep.
You know, Ring is doing some cool venues. Like, the tennis stadium was cool, and you know, I think I don't know if they're still planning on doing crazy rollouts like that. But yeah, MSG, bro, you have it right there. It's right there for you on January 31st. Talk the missus into it, or just come. We got to maybe do a party. Some people hit me up about that. A pre-fight party.
That'd be awesome.
Got some time to plan it too. And his second part was the Top Rank stuff. They just don't have a deal. I don't know what's going on. I think they were waiting for what was going on with the Warner Brothers. They just got bought by Netflix. I don't know. They have been very close to the vest here, Top Rank. Like, nothing's leaking out. I thought by now they'd have something, Chris. I'm shocked.
Well, I think part of it is Bob. Bob is not as virile as he used to be. He's 94 years old. He's not out cracking, making deals like he used to. So I think.
Yeah, but they got other guys there.
They do, but they're not Bob. Nobody does it like Bob. Bob is a one-on-one dude.
I like to think that's not the only reason. I do agree. Yeah, Bob being less visible, like, he still makes the decisions. But I also think the landscape of the sport is just like, they just, a lot of these promotions have burned bridges with networks. Like, the reason why Zuffa is on Paramount, it's not because Paramount's like, we want boxing. It's because it's a throw in with the UFC deal. And right now it's pretty much DAZN, and I think Top Rank went to DAZN and they couldn't strike a deal. So who else out there is like, what's out there? What other streaming service? What other network? And then who are you making fights with? So if you're on an island by yourself, you're not on DAZN, you're on an island by yourself. Say you go to, I don't know, Hulu or something. Let's just use an example. It's only going to be Top Rank fighters. So it's pretty much just like a little pool island to choose from. Little island on Hulu, or I'm just saying Hulu. Hulu Island.
Boxing is always been like a step behind you know, like we're always like kind of archaic when it comes to technology and when it comes to, you know, the latest thing. It's kind of an old school, old head type sport. And that's really coming to biting in the ass now because technology is advancing so quickly. And this whole streaming thing, boxing was not ready for. And I think they're still, as they're getting their footing, it's changing already again. So I think boxing is just a step behind, whereas UFC is generally a step ahead. And so is, and WWE is two steps ahead. So yeah. I think boxing is just, it's just too slow to make adjustments in this new technological world of content. You know, like content creation and content viewership and how to consume the content. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Taprank. Hopefully we hear it soon, but they are putting on fights. I mean, Xander Zayas versus Abbas Barao is a fight. It doesn't have a network attached to it. That's also January 31st in Puerto Rico. I don't know where that's going to end up. It's not on DAZN.
Yeah, I had heard that they were going to announce for that they would have had a network, but they obviously don't.
Yeah, because DAZN has Shakur versus Teofimo on that date.
I see and I talk to the Top Rank brass. I don't know either.
I just stopped asking.
Yeah, I did too.
Don't have any answers for us. All right, that's our episode. Chris is going on a much deserved, well needed vacation.
Very needed.
Vacation to a parts undisclosed. Will there be sand involved?
Absolutely.
Will there be umbrellas in your drink?
Yes.
Steaks.
There's always going to be steaks.
Cigars.
There's going to, yeah. Yep.
You're a happy man. So Monday, I'm going to get a guest host. I'm going to be in Miami. Going to figure that out. I'm going to scour my Rolodex. The kids out there know what the Rolodex is. I just age myself with the Rolodex. my dad had one in his office. And he would just, I would watch him like, oh man, that's a memory. He would like flip through it. Like, and now on our phone, everything's our phone. Flip through it.
So few people know what the hell we're doing. They're like, what the hell?
A Rolodex. And my dad just flip through it. And then you'd
pick up the phone and he'd dial and he'd rotary.
Or he would say, we couldn't go on the computer. We couldn't go on AOL. Oh my God. We couldn't go on AOL because it would. Yeah. Or bump him off of like an important phone call. Me, like, and my brother's trying to go into a chat room.
And he would come. Fax machines.
He had a fax machine that was so loud it would shake the whole basement, and like a table would like. It was like a box rec printout of a guy's record.
The most obnoxious form of technology ever is a fax machine.
Nice. On that note, kids, keep on tuning in to Inside Boxing Live if you want the newest, coolest guys teaching you the sport. With that being said, thank you to everyone who left a voicemail. It's the best way to keep in touch with all you guys out there. It's so cool to hear from you. Like, so cool to hear that you got into boxing with us, or like we're helping you either watch it, stay watching it, or continue to watch it. That's one of the coolest parts of the gig. Any, Chris, any final words, or you head off to your tropical vacation?
No, man. I love the voicemail episodes. You guys never cease to amaze me with how much knowledge that you guys have and how much people listen to us. It's pretty cool.
Pretty damn cool. All right, everyone, enjoy yourselves. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We are out.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.